Sonia, the Makba's It Happens. The widespread idea that contemporary art museums are neutral, aseptic spaces outside of time and space is one of the principles underlying the dominant ideology of the white cube in exhibition practice. In her analysis of the power of display, Marianne Staniszewski draws our attention to the fact that this visual culture has already developed into a cult of the white cube. If we look closely, art exhibitions don't simply show us objects. They isolate them from their context, create different types of audiences, fragment a broader cultural framework, and conceal their political potential within the white walls of the museum. Sonia interviews Marianne Staniszewski to coincide with her lecture, The Shaping of MoMA's Visual Culture Through Its Exhibitions, in part two of the course, The History of Exhibitions, Beyond the Ideology of the White Cube. The consideration of that which is less visible within culture. Marianne Staniszewski, professor and researcher in the field of art, mass media, and culture in relation to political and social perspectives.
When I approach looking at museums and exhibitions, the thing that I'm thinking about, or the thing that struck me when I did my project and work on the history of exhibitions, was that the most powerful things in a culture are often the things not said and not acknowledged. In terms of the history of art, in terms of the history of museums, it's a case study of this.
The importance of the exhibition space.
We go to museums and we think we're just looking at art objects, but a much more complex social and human interdynamic is taking place. And there is an underlying environment that most people are not aware of, and that historically has been ignored until relatively recently, and this was the exhibition design, the installation design, the context for the objects, but also most importantly for those who view them.
The power of display.
I call this political unconscious of the exhibition, the power of display. And of course, you have the power of display everywhere.
The emergence of individualism in modernity.
The museum experience, the exhibition experience, is a kind of a very exaggerated example of that, because we're so focused on viewing. And in the history of exhibitions and in the history of modern museums, and again, in all of my work, I emphasize modernity, that is the past 200 years or so, when we have the emergence of the modern, liberal, democratic, capitalist state. And within that environment, where we have the beginning of the nation state and the age of the individual,
the hijacking of objects and the fragmentation of culture.
Not uncoincidentally, we have the creation or invention of art, or art for art's sake, whereas before, those beautiful objects and artifacts and bits of political propaganda or religious ritual were all of those other things. But in the modern era, we decided to sequester things just for looking. And not coincidentally, with that sequestering of things just for looking and visual appreciation, we created these entities to house these objects and now installations and fragments of culture.
The white cube and the isolation of objects.
We started to make these modern art museums that had a particular kind of environment that hadn't really existed in the history of civilization before. And these were these very aestheticized, initially beige, but now very white interiors, where we hung these beautiful objects, paintings or drawings or fragments of culture, hung them on these white walls, isolated in their own kind of realm unto themselves, or we put them on white pedestals. And then we, as human beings, walk through these edifices of ritual, we could call it the museum, and stand in front of these beautiful paintings and objects and stand one-on-one looking at this isolated, autonomous object, appreciating its aesthetic beauty.
The isolated spectator in the age of individuality.
Now, in these very aestheticized white interiors where we have the isolated art object. Not coincidentally, we have a viewer standing there isolated, one-on-one, kind of separated from everything else, having a kind of surrogate experience as you look at the art object. And so many art objects are, in a certain sense, you know, self-portraits of the artist in very obvious and then very subtle ways. But the viewer also has that experience. So you have this one-on-one experience where the viewer is isolated, autonomous, and then you can metaphorically expand on that, which I have. And I view that as a kind of moment where you do feel the kind of power of the age of the individual, where you feel your autonomy, where you feel, in a certain sense, your free will, and that you are, as the cliche goes, master of your own fate, king or queen of your own castle.
The idealization of autonomy.
I don't think it's by chance that of all the civilizations, of all the different times and all the different ways that human beings have gathered their very prized objects and put them on display to look at or appreciate, that we in the modern era, where we have this kind of mythology of the idealized, autonomous, very empowered, individualized self.
The institutionalization of artistic practices.
If you go through the history of modern art and the kind of what I call the laboratory years, where the conventions of modern art emerge, you can see, looking particularly in the 20th century, there are a few examples or some other examples in the 19th century, but primarily this emerges in the 20th century with the beginning of the kind of institutionalization of modern art and the exhibition practices and the museums.
Different possibilities of display.
There is a spectrum of possibilities for looking at art, and it starts particularly in the 20s in the international avant-garde, where we have many architects and artists, designers, creating different kinds of environments for works of art that range from a kind of wild, chaotic Dada experience, a dreamlike, surreal experience, a highly propagandistic, you know, going from a kind of Soviet model to a fascist model to a U.S. liberal ideology model. You have the experiences of the isolated white cube, but there are all these other options for displaying objects that are very, very aggressively and dynamically experimented with.
Early experiments in exhibition design, Alexander Dorner.
When the first museums are instituted, we have the, in a sense, for contemporary art, the first museum, often people go back to the Altes Museum in Germany in the 1820s, but that's the first like museum just for art objects. But we start getting modern art museums in like the 20s. Hanover, Alexander Dorner is the director. He experiments with installation design and starts to install things in this isolated, modern, as we say here, white cube, even though the walls were not white.
Alfred Barr and the MoMA.
Then there were other options for exhibiting work. And at the Museum of Modern Art in 1929, we have Alfred Barr and also the architect who was the first director, and Philip Johnson, who is a very known architect, but was also was curating the architecture and design shows at MoMA in its early years. They came up also with this isolated modernist way of installing works of art.
The first MoMA exhibition in 1929.
A little detail of history. What's often forgotten about the very first Museum of Modern Art show, which people associate with Alfred Barr, is that in 1929 it was several post-impressionist artists hung on beige walls. What people don't realize is that this very mythic first director of the Museum of Modern Art that everyone feels was so powerful, and this was his first exhibition, he did not curate that exhibition. He did not select the works for that exhibition, but he did install them. So that's a little kind of warning or secret of history of what really is going on.
The creation of a universal exhibition language.
That Barr did that is an indicator of the importance of the installations that were experimented with at the Museum of Modern Art and eventually became a kind of universal language for the modern world. This white box interior has traveled all over the world.
The emergence of the subject through the power of display.
There's another point I could make about the types of subjects that the power of display creates. If you look at the history of exhibition design at the international avant-gardes, for example, those are the avant-gardes of the, let's say, teens, 20s, 30s, up. You can see that there were a diversity of subjects that could be in the exhibitions that they were creating.
Lisitsky and the Room for Abstract Art.
The most famous gallery was the one that Lisitsky made with Alexander Dorner, and that was the Room for Abstract Art. The individual walking through the abstract cabinet, very, very different from like a white-walled cube. You just look at the ideal object outside of time, outside of place, you know. You were very aware that you as a viewer were in time and in history. You're moving, and you have a sense of your movement. Also, it's literally interactive in a very simple sense of, now there are all these complex theories of interactivity, but you know, simply you're moving something around in time. So there was a sense of this, the individual being in time and being in history.
The awareness of different types of spectators.
There were a variety of experiences that were created, different kinds of subjects. Today, a lot of artists working and making sort of installation art or even just displays, there's a sensitivity now to this awareness of interactivity, even though the white cube still presides. Artists work, artists making installations, and many museum, more experimental museum contexts, try to acknowledge the different viewers.
The apparent neutrality of the museum.
The museum became, particularly in the United States, I would say, neutral as a site. They disengaged from the politics and sort of the capitalist economy and all these more messy, icky things, you might say, to use a kind of vernacular word. But the museum itself seemed kind of neutral, and if there was a political question or an economic question or some kind of controversial question, it was taken up within a kind of installation piece or a piece by the artist, and the museum became kind of the big white box, a seemingly neutral site, untouched by politics and economics and the other social dynamics other than aesthetics.
The preeminence of the cult of the white cube.
Beyond the ideology of the white cube or beyond the power of display of the white cube, we could say this is kind of a visual culture of the white cube that comes to dominate, you know, and it's in this like later 70s period that it really, the museums become much more neutral, or the Museum of Modern Art as the paradigm really does. There is a closing down of experimentation. The visual culture, I was saying, visual culture of the white cube, and it's almost like a visual cult of the white cube.
The political power of display.
Every cultural entity has an aesthetic, an economic, a social, a political, a cultural, you know, etc., a psychological dynamic. Exhibitions are things that have you're very aware of the aesthetic eloquence and potential, but they can have tremendous political power. And however much I'm interested in the art world, participating and engaging fully with the full spectrum of the social political environment.
To curator as artist.
This kind of very creative curator designer as artist really goes back to almost, you know, the beginning of these kinds of practices. There are variations of a theme. You know, now we have the site-specific work and installation design, and it's become much more institutionalized, and curation as a kind of academic discipline is relatively recent.
Curating and the public sphere.
Curators have a kind of cultural spotlight on them. They are literally creating events, we could call them events because they are temporary, representations, monuments, some of them may be more lasting, for the public sphere that very visibly shape who we are. And again, they are creating environments not only for objects, but for those who view them.
The creative potential of curating.
Too many curators do not embrace their power fully and do not embrace the potential of what their field can do and do not really engage as fully with the challenging, complex, exciting, pathological, inspiring, beautiful, ugly array of the culture that surrounds us. And I think curators have potential to be great artists. They're working creatively. They're working in creative medium.
Mass visual culture in the museum.
Thinking about the broad spectrum of visual culture and the kind of visual culture we get literally in stores and in the commercial sphere, there's a kind of a parallel mirroring alignment with the museum coming into being in the 19th century and like the department store or the gallery and the boutique.
The dialogue between shop window and art gallery.
And the shop windows, though, specifically, and the kinds of displays in shop windows oftentimes have had a direct dialogue with art practice. There are other kinds of dialogues where artists have exhibited work literally in shop windows, like the pop artists had their first show, some of them in store windows, and there was kind of a self-conscious dialogue with that dynamic. And then there are many very aesthetically conscious stores who do treat their windows as art displays. They're very conceptual.
Exit art and aspects that have been forgotten by traditional exhibition conventions.
I'm coming from the US and in New York in particular, where we have had decades where museums have been blind to the more socio-political dynamics of culture to the point where it's almost a pathology. And that's why I personally, through the years, I've worked with a place like Exit Art, which really continuously engages not only with painting and aesthetic issues, and they have painting shows that deal primarily with aesthetics, but really engage with all ranges of issues, from the water crisis to the age of terror, to what does the presidency mean, to the censorship of art, to eco questions, to questions about slavery and racism, and there's a range of possibilities as well as just the purely aesthetic or
the irony of art.
There's an irony there because everybody thinks that the artist's work gets very political then and they're taking on the institution, but the great irony that I discovered when doing this work was that in a certain sense things did get more political and that artists were engaging with the institution and asking certain questions. These were the conceptual art moment, the site-specific moment, people going in and making pieces for a particular site. But there, again, this is the way ideology works. The most obvious things are, the unseen things are the most important.
Makba.cat